This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Wood pellets, are they carbon neutral? 10 years ago, the European Union declared wood pellets carbon neutral, just like wind and solar energy, so they promoted wood pellets as a cleaner option than coal. But there is growing concern about just how green this form of energy is. One of the big manufacturers of wood pellets is a company called Enviva. It has multiple plants in North Carolina, and that company alone reportedly clears upward of 50 acres of trees per day in the southeast. They are turned into wood pellets and shipped mostly to Europe. Carson Vaughn is a freelance journalist and author. He's been following the story and recently published his findings with the Food and Environment Reporting Network, and he joins us now. Thanks for joining us, Carson.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, first of all, let's talk about this EU directive back in 2009 that found wood pellets to be, in fact, carbon neutral.
Sure. I mean, in 2009, they passed this renewable energy directive, as you said, and that they had a 2020 initiative there. So that was to cut 20% in greenhouse gases, to make 20% of the EU's energy come from renewables, and a 20% improvement in energy efficiency. And in order to help meet all those goals, the EU started promoting woody biomass as another alternative energy source, another renewable energy source. And so that kind of sparked off this new mushrooming industry that we started to see in the American Southeast.
All right. And explain the process then of creating wood pellets.
Sure. So essentially there are multiple ways to do this, but once they get their feedstock, whether that's coming from a whole tree or waste wood or whatever it is, they're taking that, they're sizing it down. And then they put them in these giant sort of industrial tumble dryers, and then they're pelletized where the lignins are sort of fused together in the wood, and they create these tiny little wood pellets, you know, and those are then shipped overseas, primarily to the EU and some other places. But, that's kind of the process anyway.
And
become a very low moisture energy source.
And the fact is, because this was seen as a way to meet these energy targets, clean energy targets for the EU actually subsidized conversion of coal plants to wood pellet burning plants. Am I right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that has allowed Drax, for example, which is one of the major energy utilities in the UK, they're now providing 3% of the country's entire energy needs alone based off their biomass units.
All right. So talk about what this means for North Carolina and Enviva.
Well, it means several things. I don't even know where to start with it, essentially, but one of the main ones I looked into for my story is that the wood pellet industry itself has a fairly poor track record of setting up shop in what they're calling environmental justice communities, which essentially just means areas with higher minority and higher poverty rates. And so we've seen a lot of these wood pellet mills pop up in North Carolina in areas where they just simply don't have the resources to do a lot of fighting back. I spent quite a bit of time in Northampton County speaking to residents who lived, you know, around the Enviva plant, and they all said, one, we're concerned about the health effects here. We don't really know anything about this. And also many of them, had certain complaints about not hearing from Enviva before they started constructing these wood pellet mills.
All right. Well, the public relations problem might be one thing, but what about the environment? What do we know? Should we be concerned about the way these things are being produced? Is it an environmental problem?
Right. Well, we can look at sort of health issues and then the carbon neutrality debate. And why don't we start with the carbon neutrality debate? And that simply is this idea that, you know, like you said, the EU has declared this a carbon neutral energy source, and so did former EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. And they say that because it's off this idea that, you know, if we can cut down all these trees, but as long as we replant them, essentially, we haven't done any damage to the environment. Any carbon that was released during the harvest of those trees, we are re-sequestering by replanting those trees. That's the side that proponents of biomass are taking. But the detractors are saying, okay, even if we assume it's true that we replant all these deforested areas and give them time to grow back, in that time it took to grow back, the decades it takes for those trees to reach maturity, we have still released extra carbon into the atmosphere during that amount of time, and that has increased our global warming. And that is especially a problem right now as we're facing the dire consequences already of, you know, increased heat in the atmosphere. Scientists and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change have said once we reach 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Celsius, we're looking at catastrophic damage to our environment. And so everybody who is pushing back against biomass is saying, even if we look at this, you know, fairly impartially, we just don't have the time necessary for biomass to achieve carbon neutrality.
All right. And there's a couple of ways to look at this. Number one, are you cutting, because trees do sequester carbon dioxide.
Right.
That helps us. You cut down a tree. Now we're starting to go backwards when it comes to global warming, right? So that's a problem.
Right.
So now I really have to ask whether or not burning wood pellets is significantly cleaner or has less impact on the environment than burning coal. What do we know about that comparison?
Right. Well, some people will say that it actually takes more energy to burn these wood pellets than it does coal because of the moisture left in the wood. But again, the bigger issue is just the time issue alone. You know, people just don't think that we have the time or the decades necessary to see the benefits of using biomass at any major scale.
Well, let's talk about how many, and talk about Enviva in particular, how many plants in North Carolina and how many trees do they cut down to meet this demand?
Well, there are three, I believe, currently operating Enviva plants in North Carolina, and a fourth that is soon to open. And they're also, I believe, trying to expand several of their existing plants to increase their output a little bit. And again, it gets a little bit messy in here. There have been environmental groups such as the Dogwood Alliance and several others in North Carolina who claim that they have, you know, clear-cut forests in North Carolina and taken whole trees, and Enviva and many other wood pellet companies like to say that they're using mostly sawmill residues and wood chips and basically the byproducts of the forest industry. And so there is debate there, but yeah.
Well, the other thing is when they talk about the byproducts of the forest industry, you and I would normally think of the stuff that is left on the shop floor of the sawmill. But they're including also live trees that may not be as useful for lumber or other reasons, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. They call that waste wood. And when you ask some of these environmental groups and other environmental scientists about that, they say, well, yeah, sure, they're valuing waste wood less because it doesn't have a high commercial timber value. But in terms of carbon sequestration, it doesn't really matter. That deformed or knotted tree is sequestering as much carbon as any straight loblolly pine.
All right. And let's talk about some of the ratios here, because the company will say, look, we are planting more trees than we're cutting down. But we have to talk about and you touched on this earlier, we have to talk about the number of years it will take for that tree to get back to the point at which, you know, it was sequestering as much CO2 as the one you cut down, right? So give us some of those ratios. What does the company say it's planting? How long does it take those trees to reach maturity?
Sure. So when I spoke to Dr. Jennifer Jenkins at Enviva, the stat she gave me was that for every acre deforested, in the southeastern United States, there are another 49 acres currently being regrown at that moment. So they see it as a rotational harvest. And again, I hate to keep beating a dead horse, but those who oppose the biomass system, they're saying even if you are on this rotational basis, you're still immediately putting more carbon into the atmosphere the minute you harvest that tree. And so, you know, how long is it going to take for those trees, those other 49 acres in this scenario, to grow up and sequester as much carbon as the acre of fully mature trees, which sequester more, you know, than a seedling would? How long is it going to take to sequester all that carbon back in?
Yeah, and in the forest industry, it's interesting because that comparison, how many are planted versus how many we harvest, when you're talking about using lumber as building material, for instance, that's a pretty good stewardship ratio, right? Because, you know, we're taking it at this rate, and we're planting it at this rate. So 10 years from now, we'll have a supply of lumber. 20 years from now, we'll have a supply of lumber. It kind of makes sense in that context to have that kind of forestry management. But again, given the crisis and the rate at which we're pumping carbon into the air, it's a different set of parameters that we're looking at. I guess that's what the environmentalists are saying.
Yeah, that's right. And it also is, you know, we can say that we are replanting, and that sounds great on the surface. But if we're, you know, deforesting any sort of old growth forests or bottomland forests or areas with more biodiversity than just your typical pine plantation, then we're still losing many of the environmental benefits of that forest that was already in place. So we've taken this forest that had a huge amount of biodiversity and replaced that with a monoculture pine plantation, which is not the same.
In 2017, some scientists came together and wrote an open letter to Governor Cooper expressing their concerns. What do they say?
Well, I mean, they pointed out that if Enviva was to meet its production capacity, they would need to essentially log 135 acres a day. And they wrote that up in a letter. That was a consensus these 100 scientists came to. They sent it to Roy Cooper and didn't get, you know, much of a response from that. But it's, you know, the carbon neutral debate is one that's still being waged within the scientific community. But there are so many other parts of this industry that go beyond just that archaic carbon neutral debate. And again, you know, the biodiversity that we just spoke about and the environmental justice issues. So there's a lot wrapped up into this one biomass issue.
I've got about 30 seconds left, but going back to the environmental justice, there is some indication that there's a fair amount of air pollution associated with the production of pellets.
Yeah, that's right. The Environmental Integrity Project actually put out a pretty extensive report, I believe in 2017, looking at the 21 wood pellet mills that are currently exporting to Europe. And they found that more than half either failed to keep emissions below the legal limits or failed to install required pollution controls at all. And that's really concerning to a lot of people because what they're releasing are, you know, volatile organic compounds, particulate matter, hazardous air pollutants, and all of those things have been linked historically, not necessarily in this context right now, though studies may be in the works down the road. But, you know, all those particulates have been linked to things like cancer, nervous system damage, breathing issues, all that sort of thing. And so in the meantime, you have a lot of these people living in these so-called environmental justice communities who don't have a ton of resources to fight back and are also now looking at, you know, the vague but persistent health effects.
Carson Vaughn, freelance journalist and author, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Frank.
You can find links to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, voices from the Southern Oral History Program. Stay with us.